This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And joining us now, Doug Farrar from Bleacher Report. And Doug, can you believe that we have now hit the end of the, not the total end of the offseason, but all the preparation? Because now with all the mini camps done, all teams are on vacation. I mean, this thing has really moved fast.
Yeah, it has. And now it's holdout season. So here we go.
Exactly. Expect that to go. But, you know, I thought it wasn't too bad because I only counted about 10 players that missed the mini camps. Obviously, Earl Thomas, you know, three top defensive players trying to angle for $20 million contracts, you know, Aaron Donald and Khalil Mack, and maybe to a crazy degree, Jadeveon Clowney. But it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. I mean, 10's not too bad when you're talking 32 teams.
True, and it's more the high dollar, especially for defensive linemen in the cases of Donald and Clowney. You know, people kind of, well, $20 million, that's crazy. And then you look at Aaron Donald, who's a generational player, and it's like, okay. Then you get into the situation of, okay, in a Wade Phillips defense, Aaron Donald is the best defensive player in football. I don't think there's too much of a disagreement about that. But in a Wade Phillips defense, you know, how much more effective is an Aaron Donald than, say, Malik Jackson or a Derek Wolfe, like in Denver? Some of the guys he had on the interior in Dallas, you know, how much of it is scheme and how much of it's player? I don't think they're going to let him go. But when you have a great defensive coordinator, it kind of begs the question of player value versus, you know, it's kind of that question of, value above replacement player. How much can this guy do in any scheme? And the problem the Rams have with Donald is he really is generational. He really is that guy.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you the weird one. Now, obviously, if you're Clowney, you're going to get big dollars. If you're Mac, you're going to get big dollars. But the one thing that you really don't see, and this is what I'm trying to figure out in the Frank Clark sweepstakes as far as getting a deal, you don't have many 4-3 defensive ends that in a 4-3 defensive ends that really get contracts, you know, particularly those second contracts. And I find that strange. Now, you know, Olivier Vernon ended up getting $17 million as a transition player when they pulled the tag and he went to the New York Giants. And so, and you have Clark, I mean, is he a number three? Is he a number two? Is he a number one type pass rusher? And it's like, what do you pay a guy like him? And what do you pay a guy like DeMarcus Lawrence?
Yeah, and Lawrence is more that edge guy. Clark is, I mean, he's a different breed of cat. They've sort of groomed him to be Michael Bennett's replacement as the edge rusher, you know, to provide pressure and to stop the run, and then to kick inside the five-tech defensive tackle, which Clark can also do. So, then, you know, then your question is positional versatility. And I would argue that in most cases, in today's NFL, that's more valuable than being, you know, if you're a 9 at one position and a 7 at two positions, I think the 7 at two positions is more valuable in today's NFL because it is such a matchup league. You've got schemes, you know, not just down to down, I mean, or not drive to drive, but down to down. I mean, you're constantly moving things around to adjust to offenses. So a guy like Frank Clark, who can play anywhere from 9 tech to like a 5 inside, he becomes extremely valuable. You know, he's got a good speed-power ratio. That complicates things. You know, Olivier Vernon, he was purely an edge rusher, a lot of upside in Miami, a lot of hurries, and I think the Giants sort of bet on that. You know, if they had to do it all over again, I don't know if that's a cautionary tale or not.
Yeah. Where do you think Clark, do you think that, you would think at the minimum he can command $11 million. How high up should it go from there?
I'm not sure it'll go too much higher. You know, we've had a few classes of some pretty intriguing outside rushes in the draft, and that obviously affects the market too. I mean, anything can happen. I never thought Vernon would get what he got. And David Cantor, his agent, is also DeMarcus Lawrence's agent, so that's going to be interesting. I would be surprised if it's over, say, 12, but it's what the market will bear. And as you and I have both seen far more than once, teams will surprise you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they will. But I think it's very important that they try to get something done. I mean, I don't know. When you start to break down the importance of guys, I mean, you know, throwing these names out there for contract extensions. I mean, you got Clark, you got Tyler Lockett. I mean, the name that I think everybody doesn't throw in there is Justin Coleman. You got Dwayne Brown, KJ Wright. And, of course, we won't get into Earl Thomas. That's a different subject.
Yeah. Well, and to go back to Clark for a minute, you also have the black eye this team took when they selected him in the first place. And, you know, you wouldn't think that a coach and a GM would make decisions based on ego as far as, well, we took huge PR hits for this when we drafted him, and he's turned out to be a good player, so now we want to extend him. Are they more generous to him because that worked out? I'm not sure. You know, the interesting one in there is Dwayne Brown. Holdout with Houston, had a you know, minor injury stuff, but I really think, you know, they do have a new offensive line coach in Mike Solari, and I think that will help a lot. It tailors more to the skill sets of guys like Fetty and Fluker, because it's more power counter trap. It's like old school Steelers. It's going to be like your childhood, John. So Dwayne Brown has had experience in, he's primarily a zone tackle, but he's had experience in multiple different schemes. And I think that makes him even more valuable as a mentor and as a player. And, you know, given, you know, he's moving up in age, and it will be very interesting to see what he gets.
Mm-hmm. I was smiling and thinking about this when I heard Russell Wilson talking about the offensive line and the change to Mike Solari. And when they said, well, at least, you know, we're going to be doing more things that's just outside zone, which, of course, I think was a little bit of a shot at Tom Cable, that now you start to see that, okay, some of the things that you've been observing for the last couple of years, you know, on the critical side have now kind of caught internally as far as where the reviews have been.
Well, Solari is pretty much a universally respected guy. Coaches I talk to, current and former offensive linemen I talk to, I mean, it's interesting. Tom Cable is respected as a teacher and a developer of offensive linemen in certain circles, but I've talked to multiple current and former offensive linemen who have watched Seattle and can't believe how simple it is, can't believe how easy it is for defenses to diagnose. They did some man, but it wasn't anything advanced. You know, they weren't running traps per se. It was mostly outside zone. And I think one of Cable's problems, the evaluative skills were problematic to say the least, but I think he got into the position of, well, I'm bringing in these guys and they're not experienced, so I have to make it simple. And, you know, if you have the current Dallas Cowboys offensive line to the 1993 Dallas Cowboys offensive line, that's all well and good. But if you look at team, you know, the Alex Gibbs teams, especially in Denver, where it was a bunch of guys, or the Miami Dolphins of the early 70s, where they're all cast off from the Egyptian Football League. I mean, at that point, you have to have your guys together. And I don't think Cable was really good at that. I think it was a simplistic scheme. And if you're going to do that, you have to beat your opponent with execution. And that means good players that have been trained for years. And when you keep flipping everything all over again, I don't want this to turn into another referendum on Tom Cable. But Solari appears to, given his history, have a better handle on tailoring scheme to personnel, which is the whole point of the thing in the first place.
Well, in fact, I know that listening to Dwayne Brown, it's not, and again, he wasn't shooting a critical thing, but he did say that, you know, they are doing more things than they did last year. And I think what it probably came down to is that you're also trying to make fits of guys to be more runners than they are just blockers. And like, for example, I think Fetty is the classic example, because, I mean, you know, admittedly he was terrible at right tackle, but how much of that was the fact that, you know, he's pretty much going backwards as opposed to in a setups and pass blocking, as opposed to just kind of getting, you know, getting anchored down and trying to get some leverage to win the battle at the line of scrimmage?
Well, it's interesting. NFL Game Pass and through NFL Films does this new thing where they're doing film sessions. They did one with Doug Peterson, and they just did one. Brian Baldinger of NFL Network did one with Joe Thomas, and it's a 30-minute masterclass on how to play tackle. And he goes into all these things about, this is why I have my knee 1 inch in instead of 1 inch out. And, you know, Joe Thomas is a first ballot Hall of Famer, probably the greatest tackle of his generation. And a lot of that was technique and things he learned and things he thought of and taught to other people. If you go back to Texas A&M tape with Hifedi, you know, and it was interesting because they played a spread system, and he was like everything Tom Cable was supposed to not like. Technique stuff, I mean, his knees are all over the place. He doesn't present a solid anchor, which is really unfortunate because he's very strong. But his upper, as I like to say of some players, his upper and lower body kind of disagree with each other. He's not physically in sync. He doesn't present a solid base to the defender, and defenders have to be licking their chops going, okay, I can run an inside counter, I can run an outside pull, I can pretty much do whatever I want, because this guy does not have a solid, he literally does not have his feet on the ground. If you watch the sacks he gives up, he's just kind of floating all over the place. And hopefully Solari, you know, with more of an aggressive man series of blocking concepts, can put that together for him. But Ifedi's main problem is technique, and it's foundational, and it's not going to be solved overnight.
No, no question about it. And of course, that's why I think you can see that there's a little bit of competition at right tackle, and that when Solari made his one interview, I mean, he didn't necessarily, because he's kind of not media shy, but he's, you know, media reserved. But he says that I think all the offensive linemen, he mentioned technique more about him than anything else.
Sure, and it shows. And the interesting, you know, Solari comes in, he's not married to any of these guys. No part of his reputation is affected by whether Jermaine Ifedi gets his fifth-year option picked up or not because he improved or didn't. At this point, that's going to be on Ifedi. So when you bring in a new line coach like that, who does have a lot of experience, has an established set of blocking schemes, has an established way of doing things, you know, it kind of puts everyone on notice. Justin Britt and Dwayne Brown, I think, are the two guys who are safe. You've got a guy like Ethan Pocket, who I think would have to probably gain 15 to 20 pounds, which I know Solari has talked about. He's going to need functional strength before he can play guard. You know, George Fant, they hope. Let's see how Fant does with this new set of schemes. It's going to be, I mean, that to me is the most fascinating part of this Seattle Seahawks team in 2018 with all the changes, is how the offensive line comes together. And it seems like we say that every year. Mm-hmm. You've got a different coach. You've got a different set of just overall blocking concepts. You know, and we'll see how many of the guys Cable wanted will actually fit into that.
No question. What do you think league-wide happened to the safety position this year? Because in free agency, it was a big strikeout. I mean, you still have, you know, Eric Reed for, you know, maybe different reasons, but, you know, Kenny Vaccaro, yeah, no contract. And it just seemed like the safety market just took a big tumble south financially.
Well, Reed is an interesting case because about halfway through the last season, they switched him to that money backer position, like Deion Buchanan and Mark Barron and those guys. And he played that pretty well. He wasn't always great against the run. And I think he's a man sort of without a position for some teams. I think he would be a pretty decent Chancellor replacement in Seattle. If you have, because a lot of teams have interchangeable strong and free safeties. It's more matchup than it is position. Reed at this point might be more of a designated strong safety, which limits his market to a point. Kenny Vaccaro, you know, they've kind of moved him around. I think he's a tremendous athlete. Based on the tape I've watched, you know, he'll play anywhere from deep safety to slot, and he'll make some plays. He'll also rack up a ton of penalties and give up some big catches. I think he's more of an undisciplined player. That doesn't mean he's irredeemable. It just means he's got some technique work to do. The guy who's available who blows me away is Trey Boston. Mm-hmm. Played 3 years for Carolina. Carolina releases him. He goes to the Chargers. gets into Gus Bradley's defense as the cover one slash cover three single deep safety, and they played some cover two. And then, you know, they'd flip it, and Boston would be the deep guy. He played the most snaps of any Charger defender last year. He had 5 interceptions. A couple of those were gifts, but if you go back and look at his interception against the Raiders, he covered ground in a way that very few free safeties can. And maybe people didn't watch his tape, or they think he's a one-hit wonder because he wasn't that player in Carolina. But it's amazing to me. I mean, there's no off-field stuff that I know of. It's amazing to me that Trey Boston's on the market. That's the guy. Reed and Vaccaro I can explain to a certain point, but I've watched a lot of Trey Boston tape. You know, I'm not his agent. I'm not vamping for the guy, but I'm blown away that in today's NFL, as much of a passing league as it is, and as much of those center fielders are valuable, I think what Boston showed last year, it really strikes me funny that he's available at all.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I just found that the whole market, I remember talking to Bradley McDougal about it, and I said, boy, how smart were you to be able to take the $4.5 million, you know, and not hit the free agent
right?
market?
Well, I think, you know, you look at Derwin James and some of the guys who were drafted this last couple years, the entire secondary, you know, nickel is a new base defense. Teams are running 65% nickel, about, I think, 20% dime. So the base defense is now 5 to 6 DBs. A guy like Minkah Fitzpatrick played 6 different positions at Alabama. You could put him at free safety. You could put him at strong. You could put him at slot. You could put him at, you know, kind of that hybrid linebacker. So I think a lot of teams are figuring out, well, can we take – a lot of people thought Earl Thomas was going to be a cornerback when he came out of Texas. And Seattle wisely made him a safety, but he had that athleticism. I do wonder if part of that soft safety market is the fact that, you know, in the draft, people are looking at these hybrid guys going, well, can we play him? And then we've got him locked up for, you know, 4 years under team control. If he's in the second or third round, it's a pretty friendly deal. I think the sort of systemic confusion as to what safeties do might also be part of that.
Yeah, no question. What team do you think did the best this offseason, or which teams?
Oh, I always struggle with that unless I'm looking at a list.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's make it
easy. What do you think?
Well, I think the Jets really did some great things in the secondary, but I still think they're behind the eight ball as far as their offense because they just don't have enough weapons. I'm still scratching my head at Chicago. I'm still trying to figure out what they're doing. That one baffles me. Believe it or not, I thought Dallas had a good draft, but I still think they're drifting backwards because now, you know, their best receiver is more of a number three receiver in Allen Hurns. And again, they needed to get rid of Dez Bryant and change that position because they had no speed and separation at that spot. I think Tennessee did some good things.
I'd say, well, a couple of teams that interest me. The Redskins with Alex Smith, I think that's a much bigger upgrade than people think. Mm-hmm. Now, they gave up Kendall Fuller in that deal, who was probably the best slot cornerback in the NFL last year. But I think, and Washington has some issues on defense, I think it's going to be really interesting to see how much Jay Gruden runs RPOs, how much more play action he uses. I think he had one hand tied behind his back with Kirk Cousins in a way that he won't with Alex Smith. As far as the Bears, you know, I like their defense to a point, but I think Matt Nagy is going to be one of the most valuable free agents. I mean, the offense that Dowell Loggins put together for Mitchell Trubisky should have been locked in a shed. I mean, it was awful. It worked for nobody. Tariq Cohen got, you know, put on a milk carton, and I think with Nagy, he did as much or more in that when Kansas City's offense was really explosive and multiple, that was as much or more Nagy than it was Reed. Because we know what Andy Reid does, and Nagy brought in a lot of the, you know, sort of interesting rogue stuff that was different. And I think Trubisky has the potential to really have a great second season. I don't know if it'll be Jared Goff-like, but I think Nagy is going to help that team a ton.
That will be interesting. And again, you can see everybody's looking for bright young coaches. Hey, so what do you have on Bleacher Report?
I actually have an article going up on Monday about the Earl Thomas situation, whether they should pay him or not, and how they might want to replace him. And Trey Boston's name might come up there once or twice.
I think there might be a chance of that. Read Doug Farrar on Bleacher Report. And, Doug, as always, thank you. And enjoy some time off if you can.
Yeah. Thanks, John.
Okay. That's Doug Farrar. Of course, read him on Bleacher Report. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Load up the phone lines. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jimmy. Hey, Jimmy, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, John. How are you doing today?
Very well.
Hey, John, I wanted to talk to you about a couple other things, but one thing that you and Doug Farrar were talking about kind of bugged me. I wanted to bring up real quick. You guys had talked about the reasons that Eric Reed and Kenny Vaccaro haven't signed yet or haven't been signed by a team, but you guys kind of glossed over the fact that both of them last year took a knee for social injustices and that these owners are kind of colluding against these players because they're ordered by Donald Trump to not sign these players. Why are you guys ignoring that fact?
It's on the case of Eric Reed. I think it's grossly unfair that he doesn't have a job right now. I think that's a little crazy. I mean, because basically what we're trying to do, because the Trey Boston's not affected by this, Kenny Vaccaro's not affected by this. I mean, we're talking about the safety in general, not politics.
Did kneel. When he was with the Saints, he did kneel. He was one of the players that did kneel.
Vaccaro did kneel?
Yes.
Okay. Well, but again, we're talking about the football aspects of it. We weren't getting into Colin Kaepernick because, again, this was a league-wide thing that safeties just didn't get much in free agency. I mean, what, Morgan Burnett, got $8 million or so or $7 million to go to Pittsburgh, and just about everybody else came short under that.
Yeah, John, I guess, this probably isn't the right platform to discuss this, but I wanted to touch a couple other things, John. Within the last hour, Odell Beckham met with the media at his skills camp, and he said that he's not going to hold out. He is going to show up for training camp and will take part in training camp. I know you think that he won't get the $20 million a year that he's looking for, but the bar's already been set by Mike Evans at 16 a year. So do you think Odell will fall somewhere in the middle, about 18 a year?
I think about 17 and a half to 18. Yeah. He's not going to get 20. That's too much of a jump. And because remember, I mean, there's so many good receivers. I mean, Evans was able to get 16 and a half, Antonio Brown's at 17. And so you clearly, if you're Beckham and you've got the youth, and if you're the Giants, I mean, you got to pay him more than Brown, even though Brown's been probably the best receiver in football the last 3-4 years. But I think, because Beckham is so talented and so good, it's probably going to be between 17 and 18.
Hey, John, and one last thing. Phil, you obviously know Phil Steele very well, and his, the holy grail of football publication,
yeah.
Phil Steele's College Preview came out this week. And, he has the Huskies in the playoffs this year, John. He has them as a top four team.
Mm-hmm.
That first game against Auburn is going to be a great game. Just looking at the Huskies' NFL talent, John, they legitimately have 8 to 10 players this year that are going to get drafted probably within the first 4 or 5 rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously, Auburn has a quarterback, the Jarrett Stidham guy, who some people are talking about potentially the number one overall pick. Can you kind of quickly just talk about your thoughts about that game?
Yeah, and by the way, Jimmy, make sure you get schooled with the professor this week, because guess who's going to be on?
Phil Steele?
Phil Steele, yeah.
Oh, hey, John, real quick. I did hear your Tim Kalishaw interview. That was great, by the way. But I'll take your answer about the Husky-Auburn game off the air. Thanks, John.
Yeah, you're right about that. And I think that's going to be the key to the season. I mean, just when, Irish Mankey was talking about Michigan-Notre Dame, that's going to be one of the keys of the season, too. And it's great to see for really second or third consecutive year, big, big games, non-conference games to start things out. I know from what Phil has, he has this is Phil Steele. He has Washington number 7 going in and winning the Pac-12, and he has Notre Dame number 8. But I think that you can see, and remember, this is a guy, Phil Steele, who 2 years ago made the prediction that Washington would be the surprise team, and then last year made the prediction that Notre Dame was going to be the surprise team. And so he has great reviews of the program. I think you can see this program's in great shape. I mean, Chris Peterson, I don't know where he stacks up right now as far as coaches in college, but he's got to somewhere be in the top 5. because what he's done and what he's established and what he's been able to recruit. I mean, you know, they'll go in with Jake Browning and do very well, but think about the Georgia quarterback who came from here. He's going to be taken over after that. I mean, he looks like, you know, I don't know, Sam Darnold, or he looks like a number one pick. So no, I think that what the key is, and of course, beating Auburn to start the season would be huge. It won't be easy, but if they can do that, yeah, I think they have a great chance to try to take a run and get back into the playoffs. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Thanks, Jimmy. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Load up those phone lines at 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. You want to get your thoughts on, you know, what should happen with Earl Thomas. And I think it's pretty evident that right now there's not going to be any contract negotiations while he's holding out. It's also no doubt that he is going to hold out. He's made that clear. Last Sunday, he tweeted out that he wasn't going to be at the minicamp and he wasn't going to be any activity of the Seahawks until he gets a contract. And they can't give him a contract because they don't know for sure if he's all in on staying on this team. And that's what I think one of the keys for this year is a recommitment. If you want to be a Seahawk and you believe in being a Seahawk, and if you're not there, then of course you go, they move on and do something else. That's the challenge that they face, and that's the decisions now that's you know, going to go which way or not. So where that stands is it looks like Earl is going to be a holdout, and what they have to figure out is it Delano Hill, is it Tedrick Thompson that fills in until Earl comes in? But ultimately the Seahawks hold the cards. They don't like the distraction. They may decide if the young players do well to maybe trade him later by close to the start of the regular season, or they just take him back and let him start at free safety and play out the contract. But you know, they need to spend some time with him so that they know that Pete Carroll can say and John Snyder can say that Earl Thomas wants to be here. So get your reaction to that. Also get your reaction to the Mariners' unbelievable start to this season. I mean, here they are 20 games over 500, and they win a game that in many years in, you know, this 17-year drought of non-playoffs that they'd never win. You know, they have a bad inning. You know, they have errors like crazy, give up six runs. Paxton gets out of the game. They go to the bullpen, and yet they were able to pull out that win last night 7-6. Unbelievable. So reaction to that, reaction to the offseason. What teams do you think are going to step up and advance in the NFL? 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Give us a call here as we get you ready for the golf show that's going to be coming up after this. Of course, Mariner baseball continues tonight. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. So the fun part now is just seeing what contracts get done. I was just counting it up today. 25 draft choices remain unsigned, which really isn't bad. 16 in the first round, and then you know, 9 in the other rounds, which isn't round. There's like about 4 in rounds 2 and 3 each, and then 1 in round 5. But that's a New York Giant player that needs surgery and may not be able to play this season, so they'll get that deal done. But you know, the reaction of all that is kind of interesting to see, because again, what you have is a off season where it's been pretty good for signing. If you're looking at the holdouts, I counted up 10 that missed the mini camp. They got their $84,435 fines, and they, you know, have to ultimately pay those, but we'll see who they carry over into training camp. Earl is going to carry it over into training camp. I know that Le'Veon Bell is going to carry it over, and we'll see which of the defensive players end up getting contracts that's going to set the market for defensive players, because Aaron Donald, Jadeveon Clowney, and Khalil Mack are the three players trying to see if they can get $20 million a year. So 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Marty in Centralia. Hey, Marty.
Hey, John. Sure is a pleasure to talk to you. I listen to you every day, and I've never called in before.
Well, I appreciate you calling.
I wanted to talk about the Mariners. I moved up here from Arizona 5 years ago, and I was a Diamondbacks fan in 2001 when they won the series, and then they dismantled the team, and I just lost interest in baseball. And I moved up here, and I started to get a little interest in the Mariners, and last year I they kind of brought me back to watching baseball again. And this year, for the first time since 2001, I'm excited about baseball again.
Well, and I think that what you said, because I know there's been this debate in town that you didn't listen to, that they should break the team up. And when Jerry DePoto came in, it was an older roster. They were non-athletic. And the thought was, okay, the only thing that they had was a good middle of the order, because they had Robinson Cano, they had Nelson Cruz, and they had Kyle Seager. Well, what ends up happening, instead of doing that, you know, what Jerry DePoto did is trade for good young players. And you saw two All-Stars come up from Arizona, you know, All-Star caliber players now, Mitch Haniger, who's really had an all-star season, June Segura, who's now one of the best hitters in baseball, you know, batting in the high 240s. And so he's made it younger, more exciting, and has really re-energized things and kind of beaten down that theory. And I can understand it, because, I mean, you watch when you take a team and you break it down, it takes 5 years, 6 years to rebuild it, and you don't know if it's going to be right. And that does take away the interest in baseball. At least in Jerry DePoto's case, he was trying to win and win now, and now he was able to win and get young players that can be exciting.
I agree, and I think they're doing a good thing with what they're doing, and it's kind of nice to be excited about baseball again, and with the moves that DePoto has done, and the way that Scott Service is managing things, and the players that we have, a good mix of veterans and some young players that are breaking out. I'm excited to watch it again, and I thank the Mariners for bringing that back for me.
Okay. How do you like living in this area now?
Well, to be honest, John, growing up and being raised in Arizona, and then I lived in Texas for 10 years, and when I first got here, it was a little bit of a culture shock, but I'm adjusting well, and I really, really love the weather up here, That's for sure.
I thought maybe you didn't like it because you don't have that heat that you're so used to.
You know, the first summer I was here, everybody talked about how hot it was. And I said, you folks are crazy. You don't know what hot is. By the second summer, I was sweating my butt off right along with everybody else.
Uh-huh. Well, welcome to the area, and thank you for the phone call.
Thanks, John. Have a good day.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Pat in Woodinville. Hey, Pat.
Hey, John, thanks for taking the call.
Thank you.
Regarding Earl Thomas and his contract situation, you know, I don't know the numbers, but, I mean, would he do this? I mean, or the Seahawks, would they want to do this? If they kind of take the franchise tag number for the first year, and then what, it grows in the second year by 20%, And then average that with this last year's contract, and just kind of blend them all together and give them a signing bonus with –
I mean, I think you wouldn't want to do it so it's you get a moving number, because remember, you have a salary cap, and I mean, it's going to grow 8% per year, but if you start to then attach a big year where it grows higher, then you're in trouble. So you don't want to do it. But that's basically what you're looking at, and what you're thinking is what both agents and cap guys do. They'll try to estimate where things are going to be, but you don't want to have it as an open-ended thing that you have a surprise, because if it goes up too high 1 year, then you've got cap problems, and you don't want that to happen. And a player is really not in a position to be able to demand that. So that's something that you don't want to do. But unfortunately, right now in the Earl Thomas, it's real simple on Earl Thomas. Highest paid safety is 13, and so you pay him more than 13. But the problem is you can't do it until you have him in, and then you get to see how is his attitude. Is he still a big fan of this team? Is he still going to believe this team can win? Because at least this team is not much less talented than it was last year, but there's still a good vibe, and you don't want to have that bad vibe.
Right, right. Would you do 2 years or 3 years?
If you're the team, you'd like to do 2 years, but then if you're the player, you want to do four or five.
Yeah,
and so, I mean, if you do 2 years, because what happens then, you get less guarantees. And again, you know, what you look at in the guarantee for the most part, it'll be the same case if they would do an Earl Thomas deal, is that you would do two times the average. So like if you do 13.5, you get $27 million guaranteed. That's pretty much where you go. You take some guarantees into the end of the second year. It's a rare case now where you can get a guy that can get 3 years of guarantees. Quarterbacks can do it. Top receivers can do it, but very few others. Now, again, that will happen, you know, with a Donald, Aaron Donald, and some of the other guys that are angling for the $20 million contracts. They'll get, you know, more than the average of that. But that's just the kind of nature. But, you know, what you're thinking of as far as the, you know, the kind of open-ended type of thing, they won't do that. But what you that's basically what both sides do when they're trying to figure out a contract extension.
Right. Okay.
Okay. Hey, thank you for the phone call.
Let's get him back in here.
All right. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
Our thanks to Matt Nelson for running the show and producing the show. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Blaine in Bellevue. Hey, Blaine.
Hey, John. Long time no speak.
Well, thank you.
Good to have you back. Hey, I think the win last night was the biggest win of the year.
Pretty much. I mean, well, because, I mean, what you look at is that, okay, you feel real good because now James Paxton is one of the best pitchers in baseball. He's your ace. And so you figure, all right, the worst case scenario, it may be a struggle Saturday and Sunday, but you've got to win that game. And so then with them throwing the ball around and throwing it away and Paxton getting out early and you're now down, you blow a 3-0 lead, you're down 6-3, you're thinking, uh-oh, this team's in trouble. Yet they battled back, and you're right. I think, you know, as that, I mean, the three-game series against the Angels was huge just because it's the Angels, and you want some distance to at least have a better chance to get the wild card. But now to win this game, that I think was the best game of the year.
Even the umpire, man, those two calls against, you know, they were so shaky, and it's amazing how much an umpire can influence an at-bat.
Mm-hmm.
And because what he, you know, it's just, that's why I think it was the biggest win of the year.
No,
then,
I would agree. Because, again, it's so unlikely. I mean, particularly so unlike this team. Not this team this year, but in the past. I mean, can you think of any team, you know, in the last 17 Mariner seasons that would be able to do something like this?
Well, that's the thing, John. It's like you want to stay till the end.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, that's,
just one more quick thing, John.
Yeah.
Hey, do you put Earl Thomas on the same level as Polamalu?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, not there yet because he needs more longevity. I mean, because he's been doing it for 8 years. But, yeah, I think that, you know, he has had a Hall of Fame-type career.
That's the thing, John, like you mentioned to the previous caller. The catch-22 is, I mean, Troy was a Steeler through and through. I'm not sure, and this is not throwing Earl under the bus per se, but that stunt he pulled in Dallas, I don't know if his heart's there. And that's the conundrum.
And that's the problem that they face because they need to see where he is. Does he want to be on this team? Is he really all in? And if he's not the case, then you don't want to. I mean, first off, you have to give him a month or two before you think about giving him a contract extension. If he comes back and is just like the Earl of the past, then fine. Then you give him the money. But you need to have him in. That's why, and from what I understand, I mean, he's training like crazy. He's training three times a day and making sure that his body's in great shape.
I didn't want to cut you, but do you think they could pick that up in a conversation with him, what his level of commitment is?
No, I think they need to see him in the locker room every day. Because,
okay, yeah, that's why it's like, God, just through a conversation versus, you know, actions speak louder than words.
Mm-hmm. No, they have to really see him and be with him, and because I mean, because this is a reset for this whole team, and with the reset, you want to make sure that you don't have, you know, some of the problems that may have been brewing last year, or you want to have a belief because you know they have to take a step back before they take a step forward. But again, by taking the step back, and if everybody's on the same page, then they can take a faster step forward.
Yeah, and that's getting rid of that level of toxicity in the locker room. And not to say Earl was part of it per se,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, and that's why clean slate. And it'll be interesting. Hey,
it really has. And again, I mean, for talent, the team's a little bit better than people think. I mean, they're not the talent of last year. So nowhere close
too.
To 213, but it's still a decent team. Hey, Blaine, thank you for the phone call.
Thanks, John.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Rashid in Bothell. Hey, Rashid.
Hey, good morning / good afternoon, Professor. Amazing show today. So jacked up to see this Seattle fan base like rallying around a sports team and stuff. And that makes me sad, like why we don't have basketball. And I'm so excited why we will have NHL. And you've spent a lot of time in Pittsburgh. I mean, you're from Braddock. They have a day named after you, March 18th. Did you see some similarities in the fan bases in Pittsburgh and in Seattle?
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, well, when I first moved out here in 86, I mean, it was easy to figure out it was a football town. I mean, because in Pittsburgh, I mean, it's all football. I mean, it's like, yeah, they like the baseball team, but they love the football part of it. And you came out here, and of course, you know, I'm out here in 86, and you can see the changeover because that's right when the time where it was starting to be more than 50% of the population in the area was from out of town. And so, but, you know, you can see as time goes on, and it was, you know, a fortunate time for the Seahawks because Chuck Knox was a coach. He was building that winning culture, and everybody in the football side started to explode and get on that, and it's only grown since then.
Yeah, and Professor, I just a couple of comments about the Mariners. The first thing is, like, I mean, I feel bad for King Felix. It was like, he'll be thinking, where was this run support when I was, like, an ace for, like, so many years? And sometimes I feel bad, and he could have used this run support, but you know what? The one thing about Mariners, it's like the NFC, like the Mariners are in a division so top heavy and stuff. And if you go in the NL, it's like, you know, they would be like the superstar of that, the whole conference and stuff. But one thing that I'm thinking is that don't look now, but watch out for Brewers Mariners, the World Series, because they're both teams with similar trajectories. And I wouldn't be surprised. I know MLB is going to hate it and stuff, but a Brewers Mariners World Series is not out of the question.
No.
I mean, I can be optimistic.
Let's put it this way. I would think more of the playoffs first than anything else because, again, you know, it's like, okay, let's not get greedy. I mean, it's like they're 20 games over. The Astros are going to win the division, so there's going to have to be a wild card. And so that's it. But, Rasheed, thank you for the phone call, and thanks, everybody. I'll be back tomorrow on Monday at 10, and then, of course, back next Saturday at 9. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.